From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. If you've recently filled up your car with gasoline, bought a turkey for Thanksgiving dinner, or maybe tried buying something a little pricier like a refrigerator, you've probably noticed the rise in prices and a shortage of things to buy over the past several months. And even if you haven't felt the pinch yourself, you've probably heard about it on the news, like in this report from Dana Kozlov of CBS Chicago.
That holiday fill-up is gonna hurt. Gas prices are at a seven-year high. It's $4.17 a gallon at this River North gas station, but experts say life is going to be more expensive for a while, and you will see it at places like the Dollar Tree. That's right, the Dollar Tree's get it all for a buck will soon become get some things for a dollar. The company announcing many items will now cost $1.25. If you've been shopping for anything recently, that's no surprise.
The $1.25 tree just doesn't have the same ring to it, does it? Regardless, with the sharpest increase in prices since 1990, consumers like us are paying a little bit more for just about everything these days. We asked members of our Text the 21st group about this, and Ryan responded, increases in food prices are quite obvious. I've increased the amount of rice and beans my family eats as a result. I've overspent our income the last 2 months. Meanwhile, President Biden has said inflation hurts Americans' pocketbooks, and reversing this trend is a top priority for me. But later, he also pointed the overall economy as resilient. And here's a clip of that.
It's important to maintain perspective about where our economy stands today. The fact is, America has a lot to be proud of. We're experiencing the strongest economic recovery in the world. Even after accounting for inflation, our economy is bigger and our families have more money in their pockets than they did before the pandemic.
So, just how worried should we be about inflation? And how exactly did we get here? And what can we do in the meantime to budget accordingly? Joining us now to talk more about this is Kenneth Criz, University Distinguished Professor of Public Administration at the University of Illinois Springfield. Kenneth, thanks for being here.
Thank you very much.
Also joining us is William Polly, Associate Professor of Economics at Western Illinois University. Bill, thank you for joining us as well. Welcome to the 21st.
Thank you for having me.
And listeners, I want to invite you to join our conversation. The lines are open at 800-222-9455. Have you witnessed rising prices or supply chain issues in your part of Illinois? We heard from another texter who said, I personally have had to reduce donation giving by thousands of dollars. It reminds me of graduate school when I had nothing to offer my community in the way of support. We want to know, how are rising prices of goods and gas affecting your life and spending habits? Join the conversation by giving us a call at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Or you can tweet us at 21st Show. That's at 21ST Show. So, Bill, I'm going to begin with you. People are concerned about a few things right now, right? Inflation, and that's reflected in gas prices and the rising cost of food and other goods. How are those things all related?
Well, we have to distinguish between the overall level of inflation and changes in the prices of specific goods, or what economists call relative prices. For example, gas prices are something that everybody sees every day. Prices of food, groceries, you know, the things that we buy every day, we tend to see those. If you have a specific type of product that you buy more frequently, maybe you're spending a lot of money on medical care or college tuition, you see those things more frequently. So one thing that's kind of hard for people to get their heads around sometimes is just what is the changes in relative prices, like is it just gasoline, is it just groceries that are affected by supply chain issues, or is it everything? That is a general increase in prices that's caused by an increase in the money supply more generally, that's causing all the prices to go up at once. And sometimes it's hard to distinguish between the two of those things.
So what is happening now, right? And I mean, as you say, gas prices are so visible to everyone. I mean, there are a few things You know, I'm trying to think, like, the Baltic Dry Good Index is not, you know, plastered on every street corner that we drive past every day to see where the, you know, the overall prices are on things. So what is happening now in the economy?
Well, one of the things that the Federal Reserve has been very concerned about, and they've been wondering and questioning just about like all of us, is how much of this is a transitory, they've used this word transitory, which really just means temporary, how much of it is a temporary increase in prices that's brought on by the supply chain issues affected by COVID, for example, and how much of it is the permanent long-lasting inflation that's caused by the more easy money policy that we've had in the U.S. really since the housing bubble collapsed, but more recently just with COVID as well. And I think the Fed is now beginning to realize that it's not just transitory. I think that was the hope at first, is that this is just going to be temporary. But now they seem to be coming around. In fact, Jerome Powell, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, said just the other day that he wants to quit using that word and really get more into what they really mean about what is happening with inflation. So that's just in the last couple of days. I think it's a realization by the Fed that it's not just transitory, that this is something that we're going to have to be more concerned about, and that the Fed is going to start to take action against inflation by tapering off the asset purchases that they've been doing more and more since COVID hit.
Okay, so I'm going to pick up on one of the things you mentioned in there, which is the supply chain issues. And Kenneth, I want to ask you about this. It seems like there's a mismatch between this booming demand out there and a limited supply, obviously. One of our listeners from our texting group, James in Champaign, said, I've been more troubled by products missing from store shelves than by rising prices, but I'm aware that many people are feeling the pinch more. Can you just sort of sketch out briefly how we got to where we are with the supply chain issues we're facing now, and maybe just, you know, going back to the earliest days of the pandemic?
Sure. Well, I think that, you know, part of it comes down to production capacity and production capability. So I think somewhat there's been kind of a conflagration or a confusing of those kind of terms. So, you know, capacity refers to how much could be produced if you had enough labor and enough materials, enough supplies. The actual production depends, of course, upon, you know, labor supply as well as what are called intermediate inputs. And it's those intermediate inputs that have been a concern. So if you take the auto industry, for example, the semiconductor shortage has been one of the big bottlenecks in that industry. That's why you have such a, you know, relatively reduced supply of new cars. A lot of that supply comes from overseas. I think 90% comes from countries in the Pacific Rim. A lot of those countries locked down quicker during the pandemic and remain locked down for a longer period of time. And so, once that type of a supply comes back online, then we should see a resolution of this situation a lot more.
Although there's this cascade, right? Because even though, I mean, we see stories of ships outside of ports, they can't get into dock to unload their goods. And then President Biden orders the ports to operate 24 hours. And then there are stories about how the longshoremen and longshorewomen there can't unload because there are no truck drivers to get the stuff off the ports. So it's this sort of cascade. Kenneth, let me ask you, who is feeling the effects of this the hardest, do you think, everything we've been talking about?
Well, I think people who, I think everybody is to a certain extent, but if you look, for example, at breakdowns, for example, of the Consumer Price Index, which is the most frequently cited measure of inflation. It's not the one that the Federal Reserve uses, and for good reason. It's not a particularly great measure of inflation, but it's the one that's quoted most often. But if you look at breakdowns, you know, a lot of the increase in the consumer price index is being driven by motor vehicles and by the shelter component. So what we call owner occupied rents and actual rents. So renters are being hit hardest because of increasing rents. You know, people who are in the market for a car, that's where you see both the supply being reduced as well as prices being higher. And then it, you know, to a lesser extent, but still very noticeable is the changes in food and other components that make up our daily market basket.
All right, let me remind listeners, you can join our conversation. We want to hear how you are feeling the pinch, if you are, or maybe you're not, of inflation and just higher prices of goods at 800-222-9455. 800-222-9455 is the number we're speaking with. Kenneth Criz of the University of Illinois Springfield and William Polly of Western Illinois University. Again, 800-222-9455. And Bill, let's talk a little bit more about gas prices, right? In Illinois, I understand they're at the highest point in 7 years. And that varies across the state, right? Well above $4 in the Chicago area. At least I saw that from downtown. You know, if you're in the heart of the city, you know, in the low to mid $3 range in parts of central Illinois. What's behind the rise in gas prices?
Well, I'll take that one. One is that people are driving more. That's always the biggest factor in gas prices typically is as you go into holiday seasons, people going on vacation, wanting to travel. And with the COVID pandemic, we saw people pulling back from doing those kinds of things. And now that the pandemic is, not over, it's definitely, we are traveling more over the Thanksgiving weekend. The air travel was back up to basically pre-COVID levels. And that, because gas comes from oil, and oil is used to produce all kinds of derivative products, including jet fuel. So the air industry, the gas industry, all of that is increasing the demand for oil, and it's driving the price of oil up, and that affects all of these prices. Now, if that was the only thing that was going on, we wouldn't really be worried about inflation. We would just be talking about why our gas price is so high. But I think, as Kenneth said, it's affecting other things, including housing, and then also the food and clothing and some of these other things that really affect the low and middle income households a lot more. I mean, gas also affects low and middle income households quite a bit. So that's why general price inflation is generally regarded as pretty deleterious to the low and middle income individuals. It's a regressive tax almost when you start raising prices, because sometimes it takes a little bit longer for wages to catch up. And we've seen that lately. And I think some of the discontent that you're seeing in the labor market, you know, the propensity for workers now to look at striking potentially and asking for higher wages, that is a response to what people are seeing as an increase in prices. And if that is allowed to continue, it becomes embedded in people's expectations. And that's when inflation starts to get really dangerous. That's what happened in the 70s. And that's what the Federal Reserve wants to prevent from happening right now.
Yeah, and we need to take a break in about a minute here, but maybe you can just expand on that a little bit more about how people's expectations are such an integral part of the inflation question.
I, Did you mean that for Bill or for me?
Well, either one, but can, since you're talking, and if you can, in about a minute, if you want to take that, go ahead.
Yeah, well, what Bill is referring to is the fact that if we think there's going to be inflation, then we may change our consumer habits, but we all also might start to, you know, demand higher wage increases, greater cost of living adjustments, things like that, and that can get it embedded into inflation. Now, I want to make clear that if you look at measures of expected inflation, those have remained relatively well anchored around 2%. The Cleveland Federal Reserve has a really good set of data on this, and inflation expectations so far they've gone up, but they're still below 2% for the long run. And so I think Bill's absolutely right. That's what the Fed is looking at, but their own data indicates that, at least for now, we're still on the right side of that.
Interesting. Yeah. And I mean, we're certainly seeing a lot of businesses, though, seeming to already have to offer higher wages. I mean, there's been a lot of news about Amazon spending $4 billion to get through the holiday season. A significant chunk of that is going to $3,000 bonuses to their workers. And, you know, despite all the talk of the fight for 15 in recent years, some companies have gotten there on their own without legislative mandates. So we're going to continue talking about this when we come back. You're listening to The 21st, 800-222-9455 to join us. More to come. Stay with us. This is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about the rising cost of food, gas, and other goods in our country and in our state of Illinois. And we're talking about whether that constitutes inflation. We're discussing that with Kenneth Criz, University Distinguished Professor of Public Administration at the University of Illinois Springfield, and William Polly, Associate Professor of Economics at Western Illinois University. And our lines are open at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. We want to know, are the rising prices of goods and gas affecting your life and spending habits? Have you started maybe driving less? Are you noticing any supply chain shortages where you live? 800-222-9455 is the number. And Bill, one of the people in our texting group, Anne, said, I realize this comment is coming from a point of privilege, but unbridled consumption is destroying this planet. If higher prices will slow that down, we are all the better for it. Drive less, shop less, lower thermostats. And then another listener texted us saying that this was a non-issue. And then we heard that clip from President Biden, who tried to put this into the context of the, you know, greater strength of the overall economy. Bill, I'm wondering, what is your response to that and people who say, you know, this isn't really a problem because they're not feeling it directly themselves?
Well, I think right now, not everyone is feeling it. And that's kind of what I was talking about before, that sometimes it's hard to distinguish some of the relative price increases. This is the from the overall inflation. That's the problem that the Fed faces, trying to sort all of those things out and figure out what really is a problem. So I'm sensitive to that view, and I'm not panicking about inflation either. And I think where I would stand on this is that going forward over the next year or so, it's okay for the economy to exceed 2%. The Fed has for a long time held 2% as the average inflation that we should try to be shooting for. It's okay to exceed that for a short period of time. And to tell people, and I think the Fed should tell people this, that it's probably going to get worse before it gets better right now, and accept that and communicate it and be honest about it, but reiterate the commitment to get back to that average 2% in the intermediate term, say 2-3 years out down the road. But the one thing that I would really be cautious about if I was at the Fed is to be flexible and make sure that you retain that flexibility, that if another COVID wave passes through that threatens to derail the recovery, that you're ready to respond with more money if that's necessary, because you need to prevent those inflation expectations from going too low. And we saw that in Japan in the 1990s. It's one of the reasons why the Fed has been so quick to respond in 2008 and then again with the COVID pandemic, You have to be ready with that flexibility because the downside, the result, if you're wrong about inflation, is that you could induce a fairly serious recession.
You know, Bill, earlier you mentioned the 70s, and I think that looms large, at least in the sort of, what would you say, the elite discourse on this issue. Can you talk about, you know, what are some of the parallels and maybe some of the pitfalls of having that be the way that many Americans still think about the issue of inflation in general, Bill?
Well, the 70s were definitely the time of highest inflation in the U.S. and in the modern period. And so it is something that people think about. This is different, though. What was driving inflation in the 70s, at least at the beginning, was the breakup of the Bretton Woods financial system, which was in place after World War II. Nixon put us under some price controls for a period of time in the early 1970s, took us off of Bretton Woods. Inflation spiked. Then Ford comes in. He tries the WIN campaign, whip inflation now. It was really a failure and was destined to be a failure. But inflation came down after that because other things improved. The oil embargo was lifted in the Middle East, and things began to return to normal until you get to the late 70s. And then what really hurts us is the rising inflation expectations. It wasn't until the inflation expectations rose that you got that second wave in 1979 that, you know, was really largely responsible for Jimmy Carter losing the presidential race and Ronald Reagan winning in 1980. So the setup is very different today. Today, it's being driven by these the influx of liquidity post-COVID, and it's very much, it's more like what happened in 2008 with the housing crisis. A lot more liquidity pumped into the economy. And
does that just mean people have more cash when you say more liquidity in the economy?
Well, it's not that people have more cash. It's that there's more liquidity in the banking system. There's more reserves in the banking system. Reserves have exploded post the housing bubble crash, and then even more after or during COVID. And it's once those reserves start to work their way out into the rest of the economy by banks lending that money, that's when you start to get the economic activity coming up, and the general increase in prices will follow that. And that hasn't happened yet. And that's why the Fed is talking about tapering its asset purchases, because that's the mechanism that they have to keep those reserves from going further into the economy and causing a general price inflation.
All right, let's go to the phones at 800-222-9455. David is on the line from Champaign. David, thanks for calling in.
Yes, I heard just a few minutes ago a comment about wages and about workers fighting for higher wages. And that's always struck me as a problem because we have relatively low wages for most people in the country, and wealth concentration is a big problem with tax structure promoting wealth concentration, and I wonder how inflation is affected by the two sides of that, wages being depressed and wealth being pulled up.
All right, thank you for that question, David. Kenneth, I don't know if you want to take that. What do you think
about?
Yeah,
that's a big question. And what I guess I would do is point out the difference between the long run and the short run. So in the short run, you know, things like that haven't made a much of a difference since the pandemic. In the longer run, I think there are effects. But one of the things we need to worry about are real wages. So you know, really the purchasing power, the difference between wages that workers get and what their prices are, and price inflation is deleterious to that kind of, you know, across the board. Another aspect of that, though, is for higher income households who receive, you know, much more of their income from capital gains and non-wage income, that can actually be a benefit in the sense that asset prices may be inflated also, and so the value of their investments go up. And so it may, in a way, kind of exacerbate problems in inequality if it exists over the long run. But again, I think I come down where Bill did in that, you know, at least for now, you know, the perception of the problem may be greater than the problem itself. Now, I'm not saying there's not inflation, but people are focusing so much on changes in some particular goods that overall price inflation may be less than what we perceive it to be. And I don't think I'm familiar with economic forecasts, and very few of them have inflation persisting, you know, much beyond 2022, if not going away in the first half.
All right. Well, we will maybe have you back to see if those forecasts obtain. Bill, just to wrap up our conversation, what can everyday people do sort of on a personal level to, you know, adapt to what's happening now and hopefully ride out to see if those forecasts come true?
Well, the one problem with inflation is that it is very hard. As I mentioned, the Wynn campaign of President Ford back in the 70s, it is hard for individuals to combat inflation on their own. But of course, the same kinds of things that you would suggest at any time, workers are going to be asking for higher wages. That's a given in this economy. And it's one of the things that will, if that continues going out a year or two in the future, that could tend to move those inflation expectations, and that may result in a longer lasting inflation. But certainly people are going to be more careful about how they spend. They're going to shop for things that are on sale. They're going to perhaps save a little bit more. And those kinds of tactics have a way of ameliorating the rise in inflation somewhat as people reduce their spending.
All right. William Polly of Western Illinois University and Kenneth Criz of the University of Illinois Springfield, thanks for being with us today here on the 21st.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.